Patrick?
Hey, David.
Is that Patrick?
Yeah, yeah, I'm here. I'm here.
Oh, hi, hi. I've just got a question for you.
All right, then.
God, I need the answer to so many questions at the moment. Have you ever felt out of your depth?
You just feel out of your depth all the time. I'm living a state of out of depthness.
Do you?
Yeah. Life is a constant bluff. It's a parachute falling through the sky, waiting for that bit where you rip the cord and everything sort of settles down and looks beautiful. I'm just still plummeting to the earth.
Do you feel out of your depth when you play the guitar, when you learn the guitar? Because you're good at things, aren't you?
Yeah, like that. I don't think I'm good at things. But when you put things in the spotlight saying, are you good at that? I don't know whether it's the British thing of being false modest, because I don't think I'm false modest either. I just think I'm all right at it and I quite enjoy it.
Yeah.
And if people like it, yay. But, you know, whatever.
Oh, okay. Well, I thought I'd get more answers than that. Have you got your guitar?
Of course, I've always got my guitar.
Do you want to play it?
Yeah, all right, hang on.
The Match. Because 90 minutes can last a lifetime. Episode 1. 24th of January 2005. Norwich City against Middlesbrough at Carrow Road.
Being out of his depth for 80 minutes isn't the most famous thing that happened to Dean Ashton. If you say his name to most football fans, they'll talk about goals for Norwich and West Ham, and then an injury just when everything was perfect, and then the way that his career bravely stumbled to an end. And what happened to his ankle in August 2006 didn't happen in a real match, but something as banal and routine as a training session with England. Dean was done as a professional footballer at the age of 26, and while he's genuine and generous, a really good analyst of the game, there's a sense of what might have been about him. How could there not be? It's too melodramatic, way too melodramatic, to say an occasional sadness that flickers across his eyes or anything like that, but that's the kind of thing I mean. It must be hard for him to watch football, let alone talk about it. It's nothing serious, just a sense that it hasn't all been wine and roses. When I asked Dean to do this show, he generously agreed, and that wasn't a surprise, but the match that he chose was, because he knew straight away which match he wanted to talk about. Nothing to do with England or West Ham, not the FA Cup final that he lost, but a story of his second Premier League game and his sliding doors moment. A story of not believing and then believing. And I think the fact that he chose this tale above the many others that he could have done tells us a lot about him, who he was and who he is. It's a helpful story and an instructive one, and he's most certainly not the hero of it, and that says more than anything else. We start, as these stories will always start, with how he was feeling in the tunnel before the game.
Well, I'm anxious is the main thing, is because it's my home Premier League debut for a new club that have paid a record fee. I think it was £3.2 million for me. Come from a small background in Crewe Alexander where there wasn't the pressure, come through the youth system. So suddenly there I am, stood in the tunnel, ready for my my home Premier League debut, having lost the week before at Aston Villa, where I was at fault for one goal. I felt massively out of my depth. Physically, I couldn't cope with the game and had cramp. And so in that tunnel before the Middlesbrough game, all I was thinking was, please have a good game. Please have a good game. Don't do anything stupid, like helping concede a goal against us. Just don't do anything stupid was all I was thinking. The other side of me was looking across at the Middlesbrough players and seeing Gareth Southgate, England international, Mark Schwarzer, Australian goalkeeper, what a huge bloke he was as well, Jimmy Floyd Hasselbank. I'd only been watching him at home every weekend in the Premier League, you know, in awe of Jimmy Floyd Hasselbank and the way he played at Leeds and at Chelsea, to see him at Middlesbrough. In the back of your mind, you're thinking, am I at my depth here? I've had a bad week last week. Am I out of my depth? Am I good enough to be playing at the Premier League level? It wasn't exactly just go out there and enjoy it. I was very much worried about how this game was going to go. Was I out of my depth? And wow, look at these players that I'm playing with.
And the interesting thing about that is you can't really let anyone know that you're feeling that, can you? I mean, around the club, in between the Aston Villa game and this game, you can't let on that you're feeling a little bit, that you could be out of your depth, that you are a little bit worried about things. I suppose you have to put the big strong man front on, don't you?
Yeah, of course. I think people think that probably all footballers are uber confident and think they're the best thing since sliced bread all of the time. And it's just not the case. We all get very nervous. We all worry about games. And I was absolutely no different. And I think that's the thing. I'm the saviour, the record signing as such, as fans kept telling me over and over again as I joined the club. Oh, Dean's here, he's going to score the goals, we're going to be fine now, kind of thing. You do feel that pressure. And before that game, again, I'm thinking, somehow I've got to score. It doesn't really matter how, if I score, that means that people will appreciate that I've been paid a lot. They bought me for a lot of money, and the goals will mean I'm repaying them. It's horrible to say. You know, I was thinking more about what can't happen rather than what should happen, which is a mentality that changes throughout your career. But at that moment, I was thinking, I hope this doesn't happen rather than this is going to happen today in a sort of positive way. So it was very much mixed.
And just talk about where you'd come from as well up to this point. I mean, you'd had a very successful time at Crewe Alexandra. Family club, isn't it? Small club, Dario Gradi's club, as it were. You'd be very well coached there, very good technically, and so on and so forth, and had goal scoring success. Your name was linked with clubs like this all the time, and eventually you went. But presumably, you'd been the big confident one there. You were the big fish, you were the goal scorer, you were the most important player.
Exactly, yeah. I was part of the furniture. I knew exactly what I needed to do in that team and where I fitted in, and I was the main man. And especially in that season before I moved, you know, it's the best season, best half a season arguably I've ever had. You know, 18 goals in the first half of the season, even in the Championship, for a team like Crewe, was quite exceptional. I really did. Just everything seemed to go right. But Crewe's very much a kind of little bubble club. It's there isn't the pressure of a bigger club. You know, fans are lovely. Dario's very much about improving rather than winning. It's about how we play. It's about technically how we look, not necessarily, well, we're just going to battle our way through to a bit. He wanted it to look good. And every Crewe player that comes through that I see, and I was one of them, technically excellent. Been drilled and drilled and drilled and coached brilliantly by Dario and Steve Holland and Neil Baker, and just technically very good, physically well out of my depth when I played at Aston Villa, and that surprised me a little bit. I thought I was playing well and doing well in the Championship. Suddenly, physically, I was way off.
So how does that manifest itself? Because you're a big fella, so physically being way off, how does that show in the game?
I think it's the levels. I think it's going from a Championship defender who, not make things easier, but certainly not at the level of the Premier League. As soon as you step up to the Premier League, you are against the best athletes that the country can offer. You're against experienced internationals at time who know all the tricks of the trade. And I just found that I seem to have to make 10 times as many runs to even get the ball, because they just were onto you. It just wasn't as easy. I couldn't just physically manhandle defenders as I was in the Championship, because they're just equally as physical as me. And suddenly it made me doubt myself a little bit in terms of, well, what have I got to do to do well in the Premier League? You know, because I thought that what I was doing in the Championship was fine, scoring goals and however I was playing. Suddenly step up to the Premier League and hardly getting a touch, especially in my first game. And that just puts a few doubts in your mind. And as a player, that's not what you really want.
It's interesting, the levels thing, because I think everyone listening, me included, has that football or sporting experience. It's obviously for most of us at a much lower level than you, and you ended up conquering it as well. But in terms of, let's say at Crewe, something simple that Dean Ashton did well, ball played up, chest it down, lay it off to someone out wide, and then make that run into the area that you would have done at Crewe a million times. Winger would have pinged it back on your head. 1-0 Crewe, thanks very much. How does that change? Tell us what these top defenders do to stop you doing that, that someone in the Championship wouldn't.
Well, when I play, especially, I always think back to myself about Rio Ferdinand and playing against him, and how in the Championship, you'd be able to physically feel the defender before the ball came, therefore be able to bounce off him, collect the ball and physically hold him off and lay the ball off. I played against Rio Ferdinand and he wasn't there to hold on to. He wasn't there to back into. He was a couple of yards off and I didn't really know why. So then when I did go to the ball, suddenly he just nicked in front of me and he got the ball. And I thought, well, what am I meant to do? Am I meant to run back towards him to hold on to him? And when I did that, he then just stepped in front. So, and then I went really short, and then the midfielder tackled me. It was one of those where you're trying to figure out what you have to do. And I guess that's what the levels are. When you get up to that top level, it's about finding a way to get in positions to score goals or to help your team away from your defender. And it takes experience, it takes know-how that you learn over time to be able to do that. Because I didn't have the speed to just do it like maybe a young Michael Owen was able to do. So I had to think a lot more about what I was doing. And that's ultimately what did make me a better player eventually.
It sounds a little bit like it's about spatial awareness as well, that what you just described Rio Ferdinand doing there is having an incredible awareness of what you're going to do, but also of the space around him and what he's able to do to you.
The biggest thing as well is that you go from the Championship, where of course it's a great level, but then you go up to the Premier League and it's so fast. It's so fast. I always think it's like being thrown into an air hockey game where just it would just be moving so quick. You can't really adjust, and it just takes, all it is time. It's playing 3, 4, 5 matches to get up to that speed and realise that things do happen a lot quicker, and that you have to be a lot more aware, and you can't just cruise through games. You have to be alert all of the time. But that's what I loved. I absolutely loved it.
Let's go back to this game, because you'd said to yourself in the tunnel, come on, have a good game. Come on, get a goal. What would have been perfect was an early goal. That didn't happen. And in fact, your team was up against it. But you kept those feelings going for the Villa game, didn't you? You carried on in this Middlesbrough game, finding it hard.
I did, yeah. I mean, we did anyway as a team, Norwich. It's not as if we were, Norwich were a high-flying team. They'd only won twice in the whole time that before I joined, which is, over half a season they'd only won twice. So it wasn't exactly a high-flying, confident Norwich team. So it was very cagey in the first half. We didn't have a lot of the ball. Middlesbrough were excellent at that time with the players that they had and kept the ball really well, I remember. And that's another thing. I've hardly touched the ball. I reckon I've touched the ball probably 5 times in the first half. Why is that? And it's because Middlesbrough are a good team.
We watch you on telly and you don't always think of these thought processes going on in this self-doubt going on in footballers' heads, but you would actually think that. You'd stand there and go, touch the ball 5 times. At Crewe, I used to touch it 25 times in the half. That actually goes through your head.
It does. And I think probably a forward, maybe more than any other position, maybe only a goalkeeper is the other one, that has actually quite a bit of time where you're not involved in the game. Midfielders always, buzzing around and wide players, and the defender's always communicating with other players. Whereas as a striker, you have quite a lot of time to just wait while the back players have it, while the goalkeeper's had it, while it's gone out for a goal kick, and you're not really doing anything. And I was thinking in that game, I was just thinking, I'm up against Gareth Southgate. He's a top player. I've touched the ball 4 times. And every time I go deep, there's a midfielder there. Every time I try and spin, he knows I'm spinning, so he's there. I was constantly thinking, what have I got to do to get the ball in an area that I want? And I think, without realising, it wasn't just me. It was that the team was struggling and that it was going to be more difficult. It wasn't going to be about loads of chances and just how many you could take. It was going to be about being alert when that one chance maybe came along. At half time, although we'd done okay and Damien Francis had nodded in a goal to actually put us in the lead, which we didn't deserve, not at all. To go in at half time, and I was probably quite dejected, if I'm honest, because I was thinking, that's a game and a half now that I've had and I've not made an impact whatsoever.
Did you feel the weight at that point of that money, of that price tag? And did you even start to think that you perhaps weren't good enough?
I just started to think, I bet everyone's looking at me and thinking, what a waste of money. I thought, God, I wouldn't, it might have just been, an old lady in the crowd that I could see and probably thought, I bet she thinks I'm a right waste of money. Like, so we paid this money for me. I've come from Crewe with a reputation of being a good young striker who scores goals, and I'm not getting a touch. So of course it went through my head as a young player. It wasn't as if I was experienced at this level at all, and I was only 21 years old. I was starting to doubt whether this was my level, or actually had I picked the right club in Norwich in the way that we were playing.
And that's interesting as well, because having got to half time now, but having stood in the tunnel before the game thinking, God, I need a goal. God, I need a goal here. It must have been worse in the second half. You must have run out thinking, firstly, I might not get 45 minutes. And secondly, I really need a goal now.
Well, yeah, because there's other strikers that want to get on the pitch and take your place. And Norwich as a club and Nigel Winnett as manager probably hasn't got time to just let me take my time to bed my way in and get used to the Premier League. I needed to produce quickly. And coming out for the second half, I thought to myself, do you know what? I am just going to work hard and wherever that takes me, then great. But again, 20 minutes in, distraught. We're suddenly 3-1 down and I've touched the ball less. I've probably touched the ball twice. And I'm just thinking, crikey, is this the right club that I've joined here? You know, is this what it's going to be like? Because I've come from a club that, albeit not a big club, we were doing great. We were winning games. We were playing attractive football because that's the way Dario wanted us to play. To Norwich, where it's a scrap, it's a battle, it's, you know, people getting head up in the dressing room at half time about the performance. And when Jimmy Floyd Hasselbank scored a wonderful free kick, I was right behind it as well. And when he first ran up to take it, I thought, he's too far out. He's probably 30, 35 yards out. I don't think he's... And he just whipped this ball up and over. I think it bounced. So he got it up and over the wall, bouncing into the corner past Rob Green. I just stood there and thought, wow, I'm never going to be as good as that. I just thought, that's brilliant. You know, that's the level that I'm up against. We're 4-1 down. I just kind of thought, crikey, this is going to be tough.
And you'd even thought beforehand about changing shirts, hadn't you, and things like that with some of these megastars in the Middlesbrough team, the Hasselbanks of this world.
Because you've been watching them on telly every week. People think, well, you're a Championship player, therefore you're playing against good players every week. Yeah, but we're still sat on a Sunday watching the Premier League or watching Match of the Day and thinking, wow, what a player he is, Hasselbank. What a player, you know, Michael Owen. We've got Shearer. You know, look at these players, Cliver. You know, wow, imagine playing against them. And then suddenly you're there and you've got to be better than him. Suddenly you're thinking, wow, this is like looking across Gareth Southgate. As a young kid, I'm watching Euro 96, watching him miss a penalty and... You know, I'm thinking, you do. Before the game, I'm thinking, oh, Gareth Southgate's shirt would be quality, wouldn't it? Or Jimmy Floyd Hasselbank's. I think what my mates would think if I brought back Jimmy Floyd Hasselbank's shirt, which you shouldn't be thinking really, but as a young kid, a young 21-year-old who's starting the Premier League, I think that's probably natural. And I did end up getting Gareth Southgate's in the end.
Would he say anything to you during a game? Again, these are things that, you know, we as fans don't see and don't hear, but... If you are struggling to get the ball and maybe struggling to get up to that level, would the centre-half say things to you? Would Gareth Southgate remind you that you're only a crew player or anything like that?
Well, Gareth Southgate, as we probably all can see now, is actually just a lovely, lovely bloke. He really is. Great competitor, but a lovely bloke. And so that wouldn't come out of his mouth. No way. He's too pure for any of that shenanigans. But what little things he'd say. Like he'd say to... the other central defender, he'd kind of say, you know, keep him on his left, or we can push up here, push up. He hasn't got the pace anyway. He can't outrun us. Push up. And you're just sort of thinking, I know I can't, but it's, you know, he's got the experience that he knows that'll probably chip away at me, even though it wasn't nasty. It's just putting a little bit of doubt in my mind. You know, clever, experienced player that he is. And somehow I've got to overcome it.
Have you ever thought what might have happened if Nigel Worthington had hooked you in the 75th minute, if he'd taken you off and say you'd lost 4-1 or lost 4-2 or something like that? Have you ever thought how, in that sliding doors way, how things might have been different?
Yeah, because I remember, I think it was about 59 minutes or 60 minutes, Leon McKenzie was stood on the side. And I thought, that's it, I'm getting the hook. You know, haven't done well, haven't really performed, never really looked like scoring. I can just wait. I'm just going to wait and see my number come up here and trudge off to another abject performance in my second game in my home league debut. And yeah, now I look back and sort of think, you know, what if he had pulled me off and I'd never been involved in the game and ended up doing what I did, and you sort of think how things could have been different and how maybe the rest of the season I might have struggled and mentally struggled with that. So, yeah, I mean, I'm pleased, really pleased, obviously, that it wasn't my number that came up. And actually bringing Leon McKenzie to play with me, to give me some support, which in the end was a masterstroke.
It was, wasn't it? Because 10 minutes to go, finally you prove that you do maybe belong at this level. And that makes a huge difference, really, to the rest of your career, what happened then, doesn't it?
And it made me realise, for a striker, all it takes is one little moment to change from being a rubbish game to being one of the best. It's that small, it's that finer margins as a striker that will determine whether you're a good player or not. I truly believe that. And obviously, yeah, when the cross came in, we'd just gone 4-1 down, Jimmy Ford Hasselbank's wonderful free kick. 2 minutes later, ball comes in from Darren Huckabee. It's not really there to be won, to be honest. I got my foot up as high as probably Mark Schwartz's head. I would have thought, the way I kind of jumped up and put my foot in the air, nowadays that would have been given as a foul. And I kind of nicked it just off his, right off his, out of his hands almost. And then swizzled as the ball dropped and just tapped a volley in from about 2 yards out. And waiting for the referee's whistle to blow, Mark Schwartzer was screaming and shouting at the referee. And I mean, the goal stood. And it sounds terrible, but I was so happy. Even though we were 4-2 down, and I thought in the back of my mind, it's not really going to mean anything, it's a consolation. I didn't care. I just scored my first Premier League goal, tap-in volley from 2 yards out. You know, all I can be is like, well, I've scored. You know, it's kind of that kind of selfish mentality. And suddenly a big weight kind of left me in terms of, I've scored a goal now. Like, it's doable. You know, I'm playing against top players. I've nicked in front of a top goalkeeper and scored my first goal. Absolutely ecstatic. Still looking around to see Norwich players not exactly running over and coming to celebrate because we were 4-2 down still.
Can you remember how you celebrated? Because those sort of celebrations normally are quite muted, aren't they? They just pick the ball out the back of the net, run to the halfway line, brisk handshake kind of thing. Did you remember where you were? Because I imagine your instincts to run and celebrate with the fans and go crazy, but did you stop yourself and remember where you were?
Yeah, you're absolutely right. It was that I wanted to just go slide on my knees, big celebration, you know, dance around the corner flag. And I sort of half step to go, and then, like you say, you realise, and then you do the same old thing that every player does, is go and try and get the ball out of the goal. I think someone else had already got it, and then it's like, come on back, you know, concentrate. It looks so cheesy now. I look back and watch it. Really, I should have celebrated. It was my first Premier League goal, regardless of the score. I should have had a little celebration. But obviously, at the time, yeah, we needed to get back into the game, and so you trudge back quickly as you can. Obviously, absolutely delighted myself with the other players probably thinking it was too late.
Obviously, it turned out to be worth it because the game had an incredible conclusion. There were two goals, Leon McKenzie and Adam Drury, in stoppage time, weren't there, to pull out this 4-4 draw, and that must have just changed both the club's sort of momentum and feeling, and yours as well, because your goal hadn't been irrelevant.
Exactly, and I think it, you know, credit to Nigel Worthington because he brought Leon McKenzie on. He played me and Leon up front, and that did make the difference. That did, we did cause more problems when balls were coming to the box. It's suddenly two of you instead of one. Obviously, and like you said, that one goal from me kind of ignited the team, and suddenly you get a belief. Actually, you know, the game's not over. We've still got 10 minutes to go, and then Darren Huckabee, wonderful cross. Into the box. I actually thought it was going to come to myself. Leon McKenzie rose brilliantly, headed down past Mark Schwartzer. 90th minute, you see 5 minutes come up on the board and you think, do you know what? We've got a chance. Managed to get a corner, and I remember being in the box. I remember the corner being swung in and just thinking, Adam Drury. Just think, why is Adam, like, all the set plays that you learn before the game, where you need to be, Adam Drury's not in that. Adam Drury's back on the halfway line. Suddenly Adam Drury's in the middle of the box on his own. Great header. And I probably could have, if I really needed to, I think I might have been able to get a touch and tap it in, because I was right on the line as he headed it. Didn't need to, obviously. Went in. And what a feeling. And amazingly, the fact that I'd scored in that game, then just, and we drew 4-4, and the way that made the team and the club feel, that's a way of embedding yourself in with the players. Suddenly all the players are grabbing you and bringing, involving you so much, because they're suddenly, oh, we can deliver. You know, and players, that's what they're like. You almost have to prove to your club players that you can deliver. And as soon as I scored that goal and we were part of that, suddenly I felt part of something. I felt part of the team and the squad, and And I never really look back, to be honest.
But it's funny, isn't it, how that split second could have been very different. And in terms of feeling part of the club and the other players, in terms of your career as a whole, the referee could have blown up and disallowed your goal. Nigel Worthington could have taken you off, as we've touched on. Anything could have happened, really. But that moment, that little moment, the nicking the ball off Mark Schwarzer and scoring, ended up making your career, really, because you went on from there to West Ham and ultimately England.
Because it was such a wave of emotions throughout the game. The doubt before the game, the feeling lost and out of my depth first half and part of the second half, to suddenly one goal making me feel like, this is easy, I'm all right now, I can score. And then for the team to come back as well, like you say, or if any of them things are different. And I think when players talk about, you need obviously ability, but you need a bit of luck sometimes. And there you are, you've got three or four examples of just that bit of luck I needed for everyone to believe in me. And most importantly, me to believe that actually I belong here, I'm good enough. And like I said, I never look back. And I always remember that game in terms of having that doubt. And I don't think I ever did doubt myself after that, because once I got on a roll, I knew I could cope, and I sort of went on from there.
And that's, I think, the next question, isn't it? Did you then, in the next game and the next game, deal with those level things that we talked about? Were you able to manipulate the centre-halves a bit more, able to find the space and just gradually learn the stuff that you needed to at that level?
I did, because that gave me the confidence to... I wasn't then having... As soon as you have doubts in your mind, then you maybe stop doing the things that you should do, because you'd rather be cautious than take a risk. And it made me learn quite quickly then, you can take a risk. You know, I'd taken a risk by putting my foot up towards Mark Schwartz's head to nick the ball away. That's a risk, really. But that's what you've got to do at that level. You've got to maybe go in a position that you think might not be the best position, but it can turn out to be the best position because the ball comes to you at the right time. And so I did take a few more risks. I didn't worry so much about the defenders I was playing against in terms of being starry-eyed and wanting their shirt. And it was just such a valuable lesson then to go on and feel comfortable in the Prem. And as soon as you feel comfortable, then you can start to play your best football.
And then other Championship players are watching you on the telly on Match of the Day and on a Sunday and they want your shirt. Did your experience of that and all of the self-doubt that you felt initially and not being good enough and then realising that it was possible to turn it around, did that then colour the way you were with younger players when you saw them, even at West Ham, even later on?
Definitely. And I think it helped that I'd started at a lower level. So I understood the hardships that there are down there in League One and in the Championship and the battles that you face there coming through as a young player. So then when I did see young players coming through, I always wanted to try and help in any way I could. I remember Freddie Sears coming through at West Ham, bursting onto the scene, came and trained with us a few times, quick lad with an eye for goal and got thrown into the first team. I remember setting up his debut goal, and for a young lad like Freddie Sears to play at, you know, to score his first goal at Upton Park must have just been mind-boggling for him. You know, I can't even imagine that. So after that, although he was excited and he got a lot of plaudits, I did actually, you know, I just said to him, I said, don't let this be the one and only goal that you get. Don't let this be, you know, the pinnacle of your career, because that's how it can feel. It can feel like this is as good as it's ever going to get, when actually the hard work starts now rather than, you know, you've reached your pinnacle. The hard work certainly starts now. And he's gone on to have a great career.
And just finally, a lot of people will remember your story as being the sad one, the ankle and the end of your career at such a young age and such a brilliant player. But in a way, your story is actually very inspiring, isn't it? Because you came from a lower level and proved that you belong. You waited your time as well. You played a lot of games at that level before you got your chance. So what would you say to anybody who has self-doubt? Because there'll be a lot of people listening who do. We all do at times in our life. But you overcame that to have albeit short, but still a great career at that level. What would you say to anyone? What's the lesson that you learned from that afternoon, if you like?
The lesson is that it doesn't matter what anybody else says to you, whether it be the manager says you're great, whether it be your mum and dad that say how wonderful you are, or your mates that big you up, or even your teammates. If you don't believe it, if you don't believe that you can be good enough, then you never will. So at that time, although I had doubts, you know, I obviously still believed that I could score. I still believed that it would happen. And kept getting myself into positions where I thought I might score. So keep doing the things that you're good at. And as long as you believe it, then you can achieve what you want to achieve. And I think someone like a Jamie Vardy is a perfect example of how much belief he must have to just keep going on to the next level, the next level, the next level, regardless of who he's playing against. And that's what it is. It's that self-belief and having that and not letting anyone knock that, even when you do maybe have some doubts.
And he went on to prove that he did belong. Norwich were relegated that season. He stayed with them to try and help them back into the top flight. And eventually he went to West Ham, where he'd become a crucial player and still one of the most popular players they've had in recent years. I was at Upton Park for a Legends game a couple of years ago. And when Dean's name, 5 years retired, was read over the tannoy, you could feel what he meant to them and what they meant to him. He played like he meant it and played like he missed it. Next week on The Match, another story of a professional life that changed in one moment, one fall, one twist of the studs, in a story called The Beginning of the End.
I absolutely bottled it. I didn't want to get hurt. And I come off the pitch and the first thing I did was ring my family and say, I'm finished, I'm done. That's me. And it was, everybody says there's a moment in your football career and you either choose to acknowledge it or you just carry on regardless. And for me, I acknowledged it. I knew that the time had come for me and I didn't want to be kidding anybody or fooling anyone. I couldn't carry on doing something that I no longer enjoyed doing, as in terms of playing football, and the decision had been made.
The Match is a Speechless Media production in association with IMG Media, and thanks to all of those involved in it for their support and considerable skill. They are Matt Vines, Steve Tebb and Ollie Neen, and all of their IMG team. And thanks too to Dean Ashton for his time and patience in answering questions both sensible and silly.
Whisper inside when I lied and said I loved you. Maybe last night, maybe last night you knew. A whisper inside when I lied and said I loved you. I think last night.